This is On Story from Austin Film Festival. I'm your host, Barbara Morgan. Austin Film Festival Script Competition is currently accepting submissions for 2018. April 20th is a regular deadline, and May 15th is the late deadline. All entrants receive free reader comments, and advancing writers will be afforded exclusive panels, workshops, and networking opportunities at Austin Film Festival's annual Writers Conference this October 25th through October 28th. For more information and to submit, please visit www.austinfilmfestival.com. In partnership with the Academy Education and Nickel Fellowships programs, Austin Film Festival presented Finding Representation on Saturday, March 17, 2018, at the Academy's beautiful Linwood Dunn Theater in Hollywood. This podcast includes highlights from the first panel discussion called How to Find Representation, featuring agents and managers who discussed how to start the process of finding representation, what agencies look for in a new writer, the most common problems they've encountered, and what a writer should expect from the relationship. Panelists included Jelani Johnson, motion picture agent at CAA, Kendrick Tan, manager at Madhouse Entertainment, and Ryan Saul, vice president of motion picture literary at APA. The panel was moderated by Matt D., Austin Film Festival director of script competitions.
Well, let's start off with probably the most common question that everybody has here, and what you guys probably get a lot of, is how do you find representation? And I also think that probably another way of looking at it is not necessarily how screenwriters find representation, but getting into your minds of what you look for in a writer. So how do you find screenwriters?
For me, I feel like for any artist, what makes you most palatable and attractive to an audience, agents, managers, et cetera, is just being a well-rounded individual. And it starts off as a child, right? So most of, you know, I think if you're writing or composing music or whatever, you have to have some sort of POV about the world, right? So people, I tend to gravitate towards people who are just naturally curious, people who do things outside of just writing. So visiting museums, traveling, you know, watching sports, watching movies, reading books, like actual books, like, you know, prose and you know, because I feel like all of that informs your art. So by virtue of that, you can write well-rounded characters. You know, your dialogue will be sharper. It'll be more authentic because you'll have a pool of information and inspiration to draw from. So when I'm talking to writers, I'm obviously looking at what's on the page, but I feel like what's on the page is typically comes from people who live dynamic lives.
No. So what I'm looking for is a voice, and that's with writers and the directors I represent. And what I mean by that is, like Jelani said, it's a point of view. It's a point of view of life. It's a point of view on where you are in society. It is. I once signed a writer who her entire background was in public relations. And she sent me in a script, and structurally, it was an absolute disaster. But the dialogue in it was some of the best dialogue that I had read. So I figured I can always work with her on the structure part of it. But she came into the writing part of her life with a perspective, with something I hadn't read before as far as dialogue is concerned, or as far as, you know, her perspective on life. And then when I sat down with her, she was very engaging in the room. And I think that's one thing that we sometimes miss, is that being a screenwriter is not just about what's on the page. You know, all of us up here have to be able to send you into a room and walk out of that room with those executives, with those producers, with those directors, wanting to spend what could be anywhere between 6 months and 18 months in a room with you, turning your words into life. So there is a social component to it. I mean, screenwriting is the only medium really of writing where you're going into it needing money to see the final product. poetry is writing, you know, it's poetry. It's like you don't really need money outside of that. Book writing, you can write for yourself, you can self-publish. But when you're a screenwriter, it really does take a village to kind of put it together. So the social part of it, being in that room, is, you know, I would say it's for at least 40% of it. The other 60% is you need to be able to write. But I've seen average writers get more jobs than really great writers because of how they are in that room from a social standpoint. So I'm looking for all of that. Social, it being on the page, and then a unique perspective on life.
You know, it's very much voice on the page. That's something I can't ever teach, and that's usually the thing that, you know, keeps me up very late at night and gets me up very early in the morning, which is this writer going to prove to me on the page something else that no one else on my list can do? And they have to be exceptional in that way. You know, all that kind of structure stuff that we can teach through process, through the kind of week after week putting kind of pen to paper type process. But by and large, that thing that makes absolutely special and one of a kind, we can't educate. All of that comes from their background, their perspective, their point of view on things, and seeing how they uniquely approach certain dilemmas kind of gives you a good idea of it in terms of how great of a writer and client they can be in the long term. In terms of how we're getting these writers, they come from referrals, whether it's fellow agents, attorneys. Sometimes we find writers off of, you know, Twitter and Reddit and whatnot. It's not a joke. You know, we signed James Irwin off of a Reddit post and sold that as a pitch to Warner Brothers within a couple weeks. We signed Trey Selman off of a Twitter post because he had a really funny Twitter account about this Stay Puft Marshmallow Monster. Yeah.
So you had touched on referrals. So with a few exceptions, a lot of agencies and companies have a policy with unsolicited material. So how do you get not only receive a script, but it to be on the top of your pile for you to read? What incites that to happen for you?
The Austin Film Festival. That's where I find all my clients.
I paid him to say that.
I'm a firm believer that if you are talented and you have something to say, it will find its way to us. The world now has become too small that, you know, everyone knows someone somehow connected to this business. Even if you are in the far reaches of the world and you wrote a screenplay or you shot a movie in Tagalog, you know, in the Philippines, you know, someone's going to see it. Someone's going to tell their friend. That friend's going to talk to someone in this business. They're going to say, okay, I'll take a look at it. It's great. And then it finds its way to us. And I know it seems kind of haphazard and random, but really, if you have that talent and you either win a screenplay competition or you have a friend who's J.J. Abrams' assistant who reads it and goes, oh my gosh, you know, the coordinator at APA reads it and then talks to one of us internally at the agency, it's going to find its way through the system. I wholeheartedly believe that.
To your point about referrals and kind of like navigating your way through the white noise, there's a big difference between somebody calling me and saying, hey, I read this thing. It's one of the most incredible things I've ever read. Trust me, it won't be a waste of your time. You have to read this. That's one thing. And that very rarely happens because for the most part, your friends and the people you're asking to submit your scripts to people and share your work with people aren't really reading it themselves and aren't informed and don't have an opinion on it, right? So that could happen. Or maybe it might not be the best thing they've ever read, so they're not enthusiastic about it, in which case, we'll get back to that, right? So that's one thing. The more common way that I get referrals is somebody will say, hey, my friend wrote something, will you read it? And I'm not going to read that. Yeah,
I'm with you. Exactly.
And it's not that I don't want to read it. Like, I love reading. I have a really voracious appetite for reading. But, like, as far as the prioritization of my reading, it goes my client scripts, and I represent a lot of writers and directors. So I have to read their stuff first and be informed and thoughtful and diligent in the way I consider it. Then I have to read the assignments around town at all the different studios, right? Because I represent directors. So I'm not going to ever send any of my clients a script that I haven't read. So I have to know everything at Warner Brothers, Sony, Netflix, Paramount, et cetera, right? So that's two buckets. Then I got to know all the cool indies that are casting and that are in the Sundance labs, right? So there's just a lot of reading that we have to do on any given basis. So while I may want to read the friend of a friend script, I'm not incentivized to do it unless there's some real passion and energy behind it, right? So I say that to say that as you're trying to get your material out there, like obviously the festivals, the competitions, that stuff's great. But, you know, you have to really know that if you're going to ask somebody to read it and spend their time and use their social equity, it has to be incredible. And if it's not, you have to have that conversation with yourself. Hey, maybe I got to keep working on this.
I mean, this whole Hollywood, if you want to call it that, is built on a gatekeeper system. You know, like the first line of defense are the story departments or the readers or the intern or the assistants and all that stuff. That's the first gatekeeper. Then if it's good enough to get to one of us to, okay, this is worth my time to read, we're the next gatekeeper. Okay, then the next gatekeeper after that is the producers. Then the next gatekeeper after that is the studios or the buyers or I mean, you know, nowadays outside equity. It is a series of, well, from being from Ohio, it's a series of lock systems. You know what I'm talking about, like old school, putting the boat in the lock, and then, okay.
They don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like, you put the locks, Lake Erie, it's how you, okay. But I mean, it is, to make your way through that gatekeeper system, if you finally get it to one of us, then more times than not, you've written something really, really good. And I'm going to come up, also play off of something that you said. If any of my friends call me and say, you should read a script, my question back is, well, did you read it? And it's weird. I mean, more than half the time they haven't. I'm like, well, why the hell are you calling me and telling me, like, read this script? I'm like, you read it first. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I trust you now a little bit less than I did before. You know, if you like it, then I'll have someone internal look at it. And to get onto my desk, there is you go through not only just a system like, can you make the trains run on time and get everyone to where they need to go, but I have them read anywhere between 5 to 7 scripts before I actually hire you to make sure that whoever it is, my male, female assistant, you know, is on the same page taste-wise as I am. So if I know that he or she likes it, then more times, more likely than you know, more than 60 or 70% of the time, I'm generally going to like it too. And to be friendly to the assistants, be friendly to those people. And the best recommendation I can give to any writer or, you know, writer who wants to break through, pay attention to who's recently getting promoted at the agencies. From coordinator to agent, from Kendrick's assistant to becoming a manager. Because those are the people who are going to really need to build their client list. And, you know, they may take more flyers than the three of us will up here. So pay attention to that. Read the trades.
So, John, you brought up an excellent point about really what your day-to-day is. You're juggling and trying to manage your own clients while you're also trying to discover new talent as well. So about roughly how many clients do you have to manage, your top-tier clients, before you actually... And roughly how many new writers do you actually bring on?
Well, so I represent writers, directors, producers, and actors. And essentially what my day-to-day is packaging films. And my my area of interest, like my passion is black people. Like I love black people, right? Hmm. Especially you, right there. So a large portion of my list is people of color. And essentially, I spend a lot of my time doing multicultural packaging because not only is it what I love, I think the last few years have shown that there's a real financial imperative for content like that, whether it's Girls Trip being the highest grossing R-rated comedy last year or Moonlight winning an Oscar for Best Picture. And that was a really specific story. Or Get Out at a budget of $5 million doing like damn near $300 million internationally, right? So, you know, I can make money and like affect change doing what I love. So that's how I spend my days. And, you know, at CA, we work in teams. So I don't represent anybody in a silo. I always have colleagues, typically 3 to 5 colleagues that I work with on any given client. And everybody has a specific area of expertise. So I do motion pictures. We always have a TV person on the team. We have a speakers department. We have a publishing and books department. We have, you know, we have everything you could ask for, right? So, you know, I never feel like I'm overwhelmed too much. And I tend to look for more clients when all of my clients are working, right? So when I start getting calls saying, hey, we got this project, who's this right for? If I'm going down my list and nobody's available, that's an indicator to me that, hey, I need to go out and sign some more people. And that ebbs and flows. Right. So that's just my personal rhythm.
This question comes up a lot in discussions like this. But what is that difference between an agent and a manager?
Well, agents work.
We give you stuff to work on, buddy.
Well, I think I mean, Kendrick, you can respond to this, too. Kendrick and I used to work together several years ago. Can I tell him? I mean, he used to be my assistant, actually. So he knows where the bodies
are. He taught me to...
Be careful now.
I learned how to appreciate management off of Salsa.
Wow. I think traditionally managers were responsible for the micro, and agents took on the macro of the career. And what I mean by that is a lot of the development, a lot of the story creation, a lot of, like, if you're a writer, okay, here are the 5 ideas that I want to work on next. And it would go to someone like Kendrick, and Kendrick would say, okay, these 3, probably not. Let's talk about these 2. You know, is this a television idea? Is this a motion picture idea? Is it a miniseries? Is it, you know, what is the medium that we're selling to? And then the manager would say, okay, here's the treatment that they've put together. Now let's go ahead and sell it. And I think that's the traditional way it has worked. And I think every manager and agent has a unique relationship depending on who the manager is and what is it that they do. I think those lines are changing a little bit. I think having a manager is almost an extension of everything. You know, the managers, I think, still handle the day-to-day and act, again, as a filter before it comes into the agency.
Yeah, it's very much, on my end, it's time management. It's making sure that anyone on our roster, their time is their most valuable asset, specifically if they're young creators out there. We need to make sure that they're not wasting their time developing with wrong producers or developing an idea that our agent partners can't sell out there, because that's just a waste of time for everyone. You know, we want to make sure that they're developing the right materials that will pay off their career in multiple dividends. And a lot of that comes from having an open line of communications with your agents, making sure that they're aware of what's going on and if there's a real shot with that at the marketplace.
I was a manager for like five or six years before I became an agent. And the analogy I like to use is if you are a company, because you all are companies, because this is a business, right? You're the president of your own company, right? Your manager should be like your CEO, making sure that everything that touches you is pushing towards the certain, the specific macro goals that you've outlined for your career and what you want to do aspirationally. Your agent, in this analogy, is like a mix between business development and a chief marketing officer, right? So our job is to like to sell, but also come up with new and interesting and invigorating ways to make money, right? And when everything is functioning smoothly, that company's stock price is rising and rising and rising, right? So we all, in the best iteration, we're all working together. That's right. And it should be seamless. So the client, the manager, the agent, and you guys are just pushing along.
So when you're considering a new writer, what are the must-haves in their portfolio? I've heard from a lot of agents that they won't consider anybody who doesn't have a TV pilot. I guess it depends on what you're looking for specifically, but how many scripts and does genre particularly matter? Do you looking for something that's diverse? What is it that you guys look for?
I'm not that rigid. I think you know brilliance when you see it. I just signed a guy last year or earlier this year who had never written a feature script and never written a TV pilot. He is the head style editor at GQ, so he's been writing for many, many years, and he does a lot of their cover stories and profiles. So I know he's a great writer. I've seen it on the page. He wrote and directed a short, like a 30-minute short that wasn't meant to be like a proof of concept for a feature or a TV series. He meant for it to be 33 minutes and to exist in the world exactly in the way it exists. And he shot it on Super 8, right? Millimeter film. And it's beautiful. And it felt like watching like an early Wes Anderson film. Like, and he's a young black guy from St. Louis, right? He hasn't written a feature. I just know that he's awesome. In every room I've ever sent him in, people have called me afterwards like, what the fuck? That guy is special. So, you know, it goes back to my earlier point about just being the most dynamic version of yourself as a human being, because you're selling yourself, right? So there's that. And then, you know, I do, with that being said, if you're, one thing I look for is writers who love writing. Some people are writing just like as a means to an end, like to just try to break through in the industry. Like, I really love working with people who need to write the same way they need to breathe, right? So a number of my clients that I work with, I've sat down with them in the signing process or just like getting to know each other process. I'm like, so, you know, I'll ask about why they do what they do. And they're like, you know what? I couldn't tell you, but ever since I was a kid, I just loved it. So whether it was like journalism in high school or the school paper or writing short stories or English class, I need to write. And when you're built that way, you'll organically start to stockpile an artillery of material, right? Because you'll write a feature, you'll write another feature, you know, over the course of a couple years, and you'll look up and you'll sit down with agents or executives or producers, and they'll say, hey, what stories do you want to tell? And then you'll say, you know what? I wrote this script. You know, I have it. It's been finished. I think you'll really dig it. And if it's good, you'll share with that producer, you'll share with Ryan or myself or any of us, and it'll be great. And then we'll go make it, right? Because that's our job. All your job is to do is just to write and come up with cool, creative stories. Let us worry about selling it, right? But if you don't love to write, doing that will be harder and harder. It'll feel like homework. Your job should not feel... You guys are artists. Like, you can go make more money doing something conventional, right? So if you don't love doing this, if it feels like taking your medicine, go do something else.
You know, from our perspective, we're looking for two things. First is, are you going to be a prolific writer? Which is, we're not looking for people that have been trying to tinker on that one feature script for the past decade or so, right? That might
We've all seem to know this.
Right? That might be a good read, but what else you got? Because if that doesn't pan out, you're shit out of luck. And we also want to be working with writers that are going to understand that there's a beginning, middle, and end. And every now and then, you're going to have to put a script aside, take the lessons learned, and apply it to something else, right? By and large, all of our clients are working on two features, two pilots every single year. you know, whether it's an assignment thing or it's a new spec, we expect that kind of hard work all across the board. If not, you're just not going to hack as one of our clients. And on the other end of the spectrum, it's trying to figure out who has the wherewithal to kind of who can approach their career as if it was a marathon and not a sprint. And that's something that it's hard to figure out, but you need to be able to have that ability in you to kind of sustain, because it's tough out there, especially if you're going out for staffing. If you're a non-diverse writer out there, it is next to impossible. And the kind of joke is that you have to create your own show to get staffed, and that's kind of the case. But you have to be able to have the ability to see your career through thick and thin that way. And so you have to be able to have a really strong work ethic, a prolific work ethic, in addition to just not quitting. And we want to be, obviously working with strong character-driven writers that have unique stories to tell, but people that still approach it as if it were a job, because it is a job.
So let's move to the other iteration of the word representation. So with such big movements lately for diversity, what changes are you seeing with diverse writers being represented? And what are you excited for seeing happening next? And what new writers are you excited for?
I think with each passing year and each success story, and because, you know, Hollywood hasn't been integrated for that long. I'm probably like the second generation of Black agents ever, right? So and there's still not a ton of us, right? And my hope is that when my career is done, you know, our ranks will be amplified tenfold, right? So a big part of how I spend my time is trying to, you know, bring brown and, you know, just different ethnicities and nationalities into the pipeline, because represent, like, it's important for artists of color to know that they can have champions on the inside who look like them and understand them as human beings. And we often, it starts at the assistant ranks, and it goes and it permeates through to producers and studio executives and managers and agents and so on and so forth. So it's not just the actors and the artists. We got to make sure the executive ranks are diverse as well. So I just think that people are seeing that they can be themselves and celebrate it. Like Black Panther is a really unabashedly Black movie, from like the shorthand references they make, the way Wakanda looks, like the costume design, the music. They got Kendrick Lamar to executive produce the soundtrack, right? And it sounds like a regular Kendrick Lamar album. Like, it's not a Disney-fied sort of soundtrack. And I think that that's an indicator of the current state of Hollywood. Like, we're doing much better.
I'm 10th generation white Jew in the business. So, you know, I don't know. I'm looking for good storytellers, period. You know, and I think there is a watershed moment that we are experiencing right now. And again, goes back to this, like, any story can be told. And I think that's what's changed the most over the last five years is tradition is out the window. You know, whether it's Moonlight, from Moonlight to Black Panther to female stories, to, like, all of those stories now have a place. Like, it's happening. Like, this movement, or whatever you want to call it, it is happening, and it's changing the way we tell stories in this business, whether it's, you know, Black, white, female, trans, you know, male, whatever it is. It's like those stories can be told, and that's exciting to me, actually, being 10th generation white Jewish agent. You know, it is exciting to me that, you know, every story can be told now without any question.
I think we're living in, you know, very exciting times right now, where I personally realize that I've been thinking too small. You know, I didn't get in the industry to tell specifically Asian stories, but now I realize that I can tell Asian stories if I wanted to. I'm excited to see how Crazy Rich Asians does, because I think it's going to prove in the marketplace that there is a necessity to kind of tell specific stories like that, and they could still be fun and universal and commercial, right? 20 years ago, the closest thing we got was Margaret Cho. And we're getting a little bit better now. But it's exciting, and we get to have different points of view and different stories that we weren't privy to. And I think ultimately that makes me excited to, find the next crop of writers to really develop with.
Become a producer on OnStory. Help us keep OnStory on the air. OnStory brings all the great conversations that happen at Austin Film Festival to the public for free. We only have 20 days left to raise $75,000, a portion of what it costs to produce a season of OnStory. We've got terrific incentives, everything from signed books to private tours to reserved seats at the Paramount Theater during the 25th annual Austin Film Festival this October. You can even get an executive producer credit on the show. Donate to OnStory today and help us spotlight the work of diverse voices who use the language of film, television, playwriting, and podcasting to tell a story. And don't forget to tell your friends. Don't just watch the arts, support the arts. Go to www.onstory.tv for more information and to watch our programs.